The other thing I think we're going to have to think about a lot now is resilience. So against climate, against pandemics, against a whole range of different things that are happening around the world every single day, that needs to be a key part in measuring a smart community, because we should be able to come back, but we also should be able to prevent, not everything, obviously, but we should be able to look at the data and make decisions about what we're going to do to prevent as much as possible or reduce the impacts and all those type of things. And obviously it's completely different in each context, so it has to be taken account of in that. But I think we are now getting to a time where we've gone, okay, we've put some technology in, we've learned a lot of stuff. Sometimes it's worked, sometimes it hasn't. But now what are we going to do with all this data? How can we make better decisions? How can we equip our community to make better decisions?
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hi, Smart Community friends. It's Ellen Reynolds-Keene here, producer of the Smart Community Podcast. And I am here with a very special guest, Zoe, the host of the Smart Community Podcast. We are doing another Ask Zoe Anything special episode. So, hey, Zoe.
Oh, hi there.
Welcome to your podcast.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I love being here.
It's great. Let's jump straight in. The first question comes from Brooke Dixon. And the question is, what is your favorite smart community app?
Oh, favorite smart community app. It's a really good one, actually, because we often talk about in smart communities like it not being about that final end use of technology, but it's a part of it. It has to be a part of it when we're thinking about tech and data and building our smart communities, because the whole point is that we can't keep doing it the way we've always done it. So it's about moving forward. I really like ones where we get the community involved, that it's not just about adding another app on your phone, but you're actually able to get more information and input into the process of government and making decisions. But I also like, I have had David on the podcast from Green Bee, and I know they've done quite a lot with different councils. And what it does is it allows people to interact with their water bills and their electricity usage, and it's gamifying it a little bit. And actually, we have to have David back on the podcast, I think. And we'll find out what episode that was, and we'll put it in the show notes, because that was a really good one, because they were just kind of starting up then. So yeah, I guess lots happening in that space. But as Brooke knows as well, it's not necessarily about that final application, but it's also really good to look at those and see what has worked and what hasn't worked. I know that there's talking to councils adopting like the send, snap, gonna get it wrong, I don't know, save something. They snap, you can basically snap a pot, take a photo of a pothole and send it in.
Oh, yes. And they do that with other things too. Like if you're at the park and there's some kind of problem with the facilities at the park, you can take a photo and like send it in.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Seoul was probably, and I don't know this for certain, but, and I know this is something Brooke looked at on his Churchill Fellowship as well, but Seoul was one of the first to have that. And that their slogan, I think, is everybody is the mayor. And like, that's who the community, that's who, you know, the council is serving. It's everybody. But in saying that, those apps are great, and if that interface is really good, but the user experience can sometimes be a bit lagging because, you know, the idea is so far advanced, but actually really need to invest in something that the users can really use. But also, and I mean users, I mean the community and that everybody can use, but also that you still need to have all of those other channels open as well, because not everybody has a smartphone, not everyone is able to use that, and not everyone feels comfortable. So you still need to have those other channels, like be able to call up, even writing that letter. Those things still need to happen because that's how our community needs to engage, and we need to really make sure that all members of our community can engage in that process. The other thing I would say is that I think on the surface, you know, the data comes in, but at the back end, it really needs to be integrated into the rest of the systems. So it's all great to get that data, but actually, is it the right data? Is that data coming in a format that can be ingested properly by those systems or processes? Does it make it easier for the people that have to respond to it on the other end? Or actually, is it making it harder because it's missing pieces and they still have to call the customer or the community member anyway? So, and just getting that little bit of feedback, understanding what's working, what's not from the customer's perspective, but then also from that staff member perspective, if we're talking about a council, for example, I think that's a really, really important one.
That's a good point. You don't want to be actually creating more workload and complexity for the people who have to roll out the, you know, the communications with the community. You're not just collecting data for data's sake. It's got to actually be useful.
Yeah, exactly. Not adding like another process that's unnecessary potentially as well. So, you know, I say this after talking to people within council and them going, oh yeah, that app is really great. However, it doesn't have all the fields that I need as a customer service representative. So I still have to call the customer most of the time anyway, or whatever the case is, or I can't action it as well as I need to.
So the creation of the app needs to actually involve the people who are the ones that are normally doing that response so that it's actually including everything they need and it's not, you know, it's not making their life harder, their work harder, or impossible to actually act on without ringing them up anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And not to say that all of them are like that, but it's definitely a really key consideration when we are thinking about rolling out these things. And obviously we talk about the community a lot of the time, but also thinking about who has to use that data or the future people that have to use that data if they don't exist now as well is really important.
Cool. So no one favorite app, but you like the idea of apps as long as they, you know, are well thought out and user-friendly from all stakeholders' perspectives.
Yeah, yeah. And I was just thinking about, you know, I'm talking about apps that I might have had involvement with or talked to the people on the podcast or council. I know councils have them. But I'm just thinking from my day-to-day perspective, what makes my life easier is I have this really boring app called, well, it used to be called Receipt Bank, but it's called Dext now, which basically I am not sponsored by them whatsoever. But I take a photo of my receipts and it reads the whole thing and it goes to, you know, my accounting software and it gets allocated or whatever. So that simple level of automation, and I say simple because now I think it's simple, but it would have taken a lot of, I guess, time to be able to do that and ingest that information. Because you can also, you can take a photo of the receipt, you can send it forward an email with it as an attachment or whatever the case is. And I found it learns then as well. So then it can allocate things a bit more automatically. At the beginning, you have to kind of train it a little bit. So for me, just that simple level, not simple level of automation necessarily, but it makes my life a lot easier because that part doesn't need a human, right? There is a human at the other end where you go, oh, yes, that's right, or that's not right, or whatever. But where can we add automation that it's not taking the creativity, it's not a creative, you know, we're not taking the creativity away. It's not a black box or whatever. We know like what's gone in and what's gone out again, but it adds that little level of, I now don't have to import that information. And so that's, you know, a very individual, but I mean, many people use the app, of course, but how can we then take that thinking and that approach into some of the other things that we do when we're serving the community, for example, what things don't need a human touch and but what things that then allows people to have more time for the things that actually really could use more human touch or more creativity or more thinking or just more time to be able to think about these things. So I use that as an example because I think it's important to start thinking about, not even start, but these things are those simple little things that make our lives a bit easier that don't need that human touch. What else could we think about when we're talking about smart communities?
Good questions. In response to that question. Thanks for the question, Brooke. The next question comes from Oliver Locke. And the question is, what is the smartest community? I'm assuming in your opinion.
In my opinion, the smartest community of them all. Again, we, as we know on the podcast, we talk about a journey rather than like an end, you know, goal or an end thing. Okay, now I am a smart community. And I think because this terminology was definitely like a smart city was a physical thing. And, you know, sometimes it's still thought of that, you know, we are building a smart city. I never really kind of, I guess, prescribe to that narrative.
Prescribe.
What'd you say? Subscribe?
Subscribe. I never subscribed to that narrative.
I never subscribed to such a narrative, but I get what you're trying to achieve. You want to embed smart community or smart cities within when you're developing everything, particularly when we're building new cities and that type of thing. But anyway, it's not smart at the end unless the humans are better off and, you know, having a higher quality of life and all those type of things. But also, we know that technology gets outdated very quickly. There's a rapid growth, but also thinking gets outdated, all those type of things as well. What other decisions can we make with data? You know, policies change, all these type of things change. So it's not this end state as we know. But I think there's great pockets of innovation happening within, I'll stick with Australia for now. Obviously, I've done a lot of travel on this topic and places like Amsterdam were, you know, moving ahead and doing a whole range of different activities. And people knew what a smart city was there. And when I met the council there, they were not necessarily young, but they were like lively and they wanted, they like it was a...
Like enthusiastic.
Yeah, enthusiastic. It was a privilege to serve the pub, which I really loved. But then they were thinking about these new ideas and I really enjoyed that because there was lots of collaboration. So it wasn't just the council doing that. It was like the private sector, the academic sector. So that kind of collaboration and that people know, you know, this is the way we work really signifies that that's a smart city or a smart community. They used smart city back then and still continue to do so. But then it's continuing to progress that as well. Barcelona, obviously one of the first, lots of things happening there. But one, and I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but Dublin, Ohio is a really small, well, quite a small place in Ohio, in America. And they've been featured in the Intelligent Community Forum. So we can find a link and we can put the link in the show notes. But they invested in technology really early on. And so obviously there's different, I guess, regulations and things that allows, like in terms of telecommunications, so it'd be different in Australia, America, et cetera. But anyway, it all worked out that they were able to invest in their own fiber network and network it to whatever, you know, degree that was. And so they had all these foundations and then they built on top of those. So what I like about that approach is thinking about those foundations as those kind of key, well, foundations, I guess, you know, it's self-explanatory, but then what else do we need to layer on top of that to then make things happen? And the things that layer on top of that are created by the people that in their that are in the council actually wanting to do something differently. So that's what I kind of look at when I think about smart communities is when I'm talking to governments, when I'm talking to councils, when I'm talking to community groups and leaders, that they feel empowered that they can actually do something differently. And that to me makes a smart community. So when I went to Dublin, Ohio in 2020 before the pandemic, I was talking to so and Columbus, Ohio, very close by. But just the energy in the room of, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do this differently, or just that this is the way we're going to move forward, that we're not just going to keep doing it the way we've always done it, that really signifies to me that that is a smart community and that they will continue to move forward.
So there is real buy-in from the people involved.
Exactly, exactly. And I think similarly, we've still got work to do, we've still got collaborations to make, we've still got communities to build, and it continues on and on. But I think that buy-in that we can actually do it differently and that the people, like the parties come together for that common good is a real key indicator. The other thing I think we're going to have to think about a lot now is resilience. So against climate, against pandemics, against a whole range of different things that are happening around the world every single day, that needs to be a key part in measuring, in inverted commas, a smart community because we should be able to come back, but we also should be able to prevent, not everything obviously, but we should be able to look at the data and make decisions about what we're going to do to prevent as much as possible or reduce the impacts and all those type of things. And obviously it's completely different in each context, so it has to be taken account of in that way, of course. But I think we are now getting to a time where we've gone, okay, we've put some technology in, we've learned a lot of stuff, sometimes it's worked, sometimes it hasn't, but now what are we going to do with all this data? How can we make better decisions? How can we equip our community to make better decisions? How can we equip our local councils and governments to make better decisions? And by equip, I mean, not necessarily educate, but inform awareness, building skill sets, all those type of things that comes into it. How are we going to do that? But then really focusing on like resilience, because we know that customer expectations are changing if we're talking about local government context, because we used to be able to have everything instantly. Why does it take a week to get this form signed or whatever the case is, or to get an answer from this, that, or the other? And so that's changing. But also then our, you know, our lives are more and more connected, as we know, digitally connected, and this disruption is not acceptable. So we're saying, no, we need to come back quicker. And when we come back, and it's also not just about productivity or whatever, but it's about people, right? Humans, mental well-being, all those type of things. It's really going to feed into this as we move forward. So it won't just be about, okay, what technology can we pilot next? It's how can we make our community more resilient? And obviously a whole range of things depending on the context of that as well.
Lots to think about for sure.
Yes.
And it's it's the maturing of the smart community space, isn't it? Because having an app is no longer really smart enough.
Yeah, exactly. And it might be part of the suite, right? It's part of the tools. And I think you hit the nail on the head there about maturity. And I've been talking about it on the podcast a lot as well. The conversations are maturing on the podcast, which is a signal of the times, and that we are, and those conversations are shifting everywhere. Not saying the podcast is the center of the universe of smart communities, but I talk to a lot of different people in and out of the podcast as well. But yeah, these questions, these harder questions are starting to be asked now that we have better understanding and the space is maturing. And we're also getting more people in the space, which I love, and different backgrounds and skill sets and experiences, more diversity. It's no longer you don't have to know about blockchain or whatever. You need to be able to understand what you can bring to the table and then listen to, you know, and collaborate with the people that have different skills to you, that we don't all have, you know, all of the answers. So yeah, that's exciting.
Totally. Well, the next question comes from Gaia Gounder. I hope I've got your name right. And it is, what is the most rewarding project that you have worked on that you're allowed to tell us about? Because I know there's probably some that are kind of a bit hush-hush.
There are a few confidential ones, of course, maybe not of course. There are some confidential ones. But I was thinking about this question that I read, and thank you, Gaia, for the question. Gaia is coming on the podcast soon, which is exciting. So I have done some work with Gaia, which has been really great. And again, really focused on how can we embed the smart community approach? So it's not just about having a separate strategy, but how do we have a framework and an action plan to be able to embed this into everything that the council does to benefit the community? And I really loved that project because...
Which project?
Sorry, the project I did with Camden. Project I did with Camden Council, which again is their project to talk about. So I won't talk about it too much, but I guess the approach we take in all projects is we had to do it all remotely actually because of the pandemic, but we engaged with the people that were making the decisions. So it wasn't just like, not even making decisions, rather, that's the wrong terminology. We engaged with the people that it would impact or that would have input into it, or you know, have problems to solve, right? Pain points. And so, you know, when we were engaging with different people, you know, they didn't have to talk about technology. They just had to tell me talk about their pain points and then how can we potentially start to solve some of these using new ways of thinking, technology and data as enablers, as we say. But what I loved about that project is everyone was really empowered. Everyone was really engaged. They really do have a culture of innovation. And this is something Guy and I talk about on the podcast that we recorded, which will come out after this episode, I believe. Or maybe it won't. Maybe it will be before. But anyway, we'll put some kind of link somewhere where you can find it.
I think it will be after. I can check. Hang on.
I think it'll be after.
This episode is coming out. It is the last episode in August.
29th.
So yeah. And then we'll say this at the end.
Yeah. So I recorded an episode, well, the guy's episode will already be out, so you can have a listen and go and check that out, and we'll put the link in the show notes. But the other project I guess I wanted to talk about, which, you know, is it a project, is it not? But just, I guess this podcast is a project in its own right, I suppose. It's rewarding not because of...
That's true.
I don't know, I get to do the podcast or whatever. But it's been rewarding in the sense of how many different people I've been able to talk to, and then the opportunities that it has provided for other people to learn, like people listening to the podcast, because so many people are like, oh, you know, thanks for doing this, Zoe. But I love that it's been able to be, I guess, enjoyed and made it accessible for people to join in this conversation. So it's been really rewarding in when people, you know, will message me and be like, oh, hey, I've learned a lot from this. And can you connect me to this person? So it's about creating those links to all these different people, which I really love. And I was talking to somebody last night. And again, you don't often hear all these stories, right? And it just so happened I was talking to someone last night and they said that they'd been on the podcast. And I won't say who it was because I'm going to get them to share. And so we'll share it at a later stage. But basically they said to me, oh, Zoe, this big company in America, I think it was America, contacted me a couple of months ago. I meant to tell you about it. I'll send you. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I didn't really quite get the link at the beginning. But basically he said, and they contacted me and it was about urban mining. I'm going to give it away now. But urban mining. And they contacted me after listening to the podcast and then they invited me over to London to do a series of workshops with all these different people and create basically a, I guess, a bit of a methodology about how we can all be our own urban miners and, you know, what's involved and all that kind of stuff. So using that. And at first I was like, I thought he was just talking about a podcast that he'd been on and was just telling me about it. But it was our podcast. And I was like, oh, from our podcast. And he said, yeah, one of the staff members was just listening to it and they contacted me. So those stories like that really make it worthwhile, I guess, to be able to know that you're having that impact because, you know, that person then goes over and then it spreads it even further and then it goes again and again and again. And I think that's what's been really rewarding in doing this. As long, you know, obviously, it has so many other benefits in how many people I get to meet and all those type of things as well and the conversations I get to have. But it's actually about the impact that we're able to make, which we don't always know and it's hard to measure. But hearing stories like that, you know, if you hear one, you know that there's many other connections and things that are happening. So
yeah, so if you've got a story like that where either you were on the podcast or you were just listening to the podcast and it sparked some kind of decision for you or action, or it gave you a link for something to go and follow up in your job. And then that led to some kind of career move or anything like that. We want to hear from you. If you are actually having the Smart Community podcast in your life have not just a great effect of being interesting and, you know, something that you listen to as sort of edutainment, but actually having a tangible impact in your life, we want to hear about it, please.
Yes. Send those stories in. Nothing is too small either. And yeah, it doesn't have to be, you know, some massive opportunity or whatever. But I've also, you know, had emails that is like, oh, after listening to your podcast, I decided to enroll in engineering, you know.
Yeah, amazing.
Which, you know, I just think you just, yeah, you don't know. And I think that's the other impact of doing this work in smart communities as well. You don't necessarily see all the impact in writing that strategy or implementing that project, but the impact ripples out. And I think that's the most rewarding thing about what I get to do. And I feel very, I guess, privileged to be able to do that as well and work in this way. And I think the other thing, I guess, what I love to do as well is when I get invited to speak to big conferences as well. I love that. But particularly when I get to go to like universities or high schools and just share my story with students, and then I always tell, add me on LinkedIn, and then I get the messages of, oh, hey, I was looking at this and I'm thinking about this, that, and the other, or I'm thinking about studying engineering, or I'm thinking about doing this, or whatever it is. And, you know, you don't have to have all the answers. Like, you know, I just listen, I just talk to people. A lot of time, that's all they need. And, you know, even high school students will reach out to me and say, oh, I read that article that you did on STEM and I want to do engineering. And that really makes it worthwhile. And yeah, I think if we can not necessarily measure more of that, but just like appreciate or...
if we could capture it.
Capture it.
It is hard to measure anything to do with podcasts because it is, by its very nature, a one-way conversation. You know, people are listening well and truly sometimes months after you've recorded the episode or the interview, you know, and sometimes they're listening months or years after it's been published. And, you know, usually listening also when they're doing something else with their hands. So they're not even necessarily able to just like immediately send you a message on LinkedIn or something because they're driving a car. And then by the time they get to work and, you know, get out of the car, it's like, it's sort of out of their head. So it's really hard to measure anything to do with podcasts, but these kinds of stories, I mean, this is the qualitative data that you need people to tell you about in order to know about, because otherwise it's kind of invisible. And we want to make it visible or audible, or send us a voice memo. We'd love to put it on the podcast if you've got a story like that. And I agree with you, no story is too small.
Yeah, I love that too. And I just think then that then feeds into building smarter communities, which is what I'm all about, what we're all about. And because we want to be able to, yeah, I guess, like going back to diversity, like bringing more people into the conversation and then hopefully then influencing them to get more involved, and whether it's work or whether it's play or whether it's just, oh, hey, I'm going to now join a community group because I want to learn more about whatever. Yeah, it really does make a huge impact. And I think that is very, I mean, it's very rewarding, but also I love doing it. And the impact, yeah, you can never measure it all, but it's important.
And it's nice to hear.
Yeah.
It's encouraging. So that brings us nicely to the next question, which is from me, which is, what are you most excited about in the smart community space at the moment? So we've talked about what's been the most rewarding, but what are you kind of excited about that's, you know, on the horizon, or whether it's a new technology or new, you know, ways of working? What is it?
Yeah, great question. I think what I am really excited about is, because as we've talked about, that maturing of conversation and maturing of just, you know, understanding about where we want to go, what we want to do. There's many journeys, right? And many places in the journey. But I am excited to input into, I guess, kind of guidance and standardized approaches. This sounds really boring, actually, but it's fun and exciting, because what it then does is it breaks down some of those barriers for, say, smaller councils, because they can point to a guidance document. For example, if we're thinking about, you know, foundational infrastructure or something like that, or data management and what decisions can we make with that data, just getting some of that stuff out there into the world, even if it's, you know, if it's high level, it then gives some like tangible kind of things to them, people can point to, and they can adapt as they need to. But I think sometimes that barrier to entry to keep progressing on the journey sometimes seems really high. Whereas if you've got something that you can point to and say, oh, okay, well, this is how we do it, you know, or this is what I'm going to put into the next phase of my development or whatever the case is. And I'm, yeah, excited to see some of that come to life. Now, that's fairly boring to the general user, but it will make really huge impacts for the community, because we'll see this stuff getting embedded. So the smart community approach being embedded into the business as usual is what I am most excited about, because it's pushing the status quo. It's changing the way we're doing things, but it's also setting up the approach so then others can pick up and take it. So it's not just like, okay, well, obviously each community is different, each area is different, all the context, you bring all that in, but there are common threads that we can then use across. And I think once, like we talked about people on different journeys, those councils that are fairly mature and they're in their journey can then share that information with others, and then we can continue to build on that. So I'm really excited about that, and more collaborations happening. The other thing I'm really excited about is, I guess, the changed way of working that we have. I worked remotely for a long time, but I was always kind of like abnormal, and now it's kind of normalized. And I think it's not necessarily that I think working from home is the best for everybody. As we know, not everybody can do it. For me, it works well sometimes, but I actually really enjoy being, and again, I feel very privileged to be able to have a role where I can actually literally work from anywhere that has strong internet connection and a device that I can use, which is great. But the flexibility, the conversation that it's allowed people to have, and the flexibility it's brought to the front has, I think, really been shifting, which I really think is a positive thing, because we can have better conversations about when we're at work, well, our whole lives, basically. You know, people, we used to talk about bringing our whole life to work or whatever, but actually it's about our whole lives are our whole lives, and we don't need to bring them to work. Work just happens to be part of our whole life. And we're having better conversations about that. Like, it's like, and we're being more open about that and honest about that, because we still had lives before. We just weren't able to be honest. And I think it's amazing for, I don't want to just say women in the workforce, but parents in the workforce, like people with different circumstances that they need to, you know, they need that flexibility. There's a whole, I think there's more now conversations happening. Therefore, the jobs are wider, the opportunities are bigger. We can kind of, you don't have to necessarily right there, like You don't have to necessarily be able to physically travel to your job every day, which is a struggle for a lot of people. In certain circumstances, I just also want to caveat, I'm talking about like knowledge-based jobs mostly, but I do hope that that conversation is flowing down to jobs where you have to be somewhere physically as well, and that you can have more of those open, honest conversations about our lives and how we can fit those in. And then thinking about how tech can, those small automations we were kind of talking about earlier, how we'll see those increase where hopefully then we can have more creative time or more leisure time, doesn't necessarily have to be productive, and how we can then fit that into our, or not fit, I don't want to say that, but like integrate that into our whole lives as well. So that's, I guess, what I'm seeing at just, you know, quite a micro level, like a personal level, but definitely having those conversations with others as well and seeing where people are moving in terms of roles and what's important to them as well. It's not necessarily just the dollars, but also that flexibility and being able to say, oh, I want to have a fully remote job if that's available to me, and that those things are actually available and people can take those opportunities where they can. And I guess seeing the reskilling of people during the pandemic, but you know, we're not through it yet, but seeing that as well, and then it's opening up doors and opportunities for people that typically may not have joined such a workforce, you know, in STEM or whatever the case is, because it didn't feel like they could. Whereas I think now having better conversations, I think we know that we need more of that diversity and that everyone belongs in the smart community space. Therefore, they can reskill and upskill and do all those things. So again, I think thinking about impact, it's not just, and no, I know we're talking about the podcast impact, but that's great and amazing. And I'm super proud of what we've been able to achieve. But thinking about all those other people that are doing amazing things, that even just things like opening up doors for women in technology or bring people from different backgrounds in working with new Australians and things like that. And I just think that they really do have those broader impacts because it, and opportunity creates more opportunity or more opportunity. And then it, you know, just ripples out. And I do really think that we're going to see more and more of that as we continue to have these conversations. And, you know, as people are shifting and changing and realizing that we are doing it differently, like it's not future, it's happening right now. And that it will continue to shift and change and that we can shape it.
Yeah, and that we can change because we've, I mean, obviously there's been a lot of change in the last few years and some of that's not been good change and some of it, you know, we're all fairly change fatigued, but we can change. It's no longer that argument that like, no, this is the way it's always been done and it can't be changed.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think, yeah, like you said, it's not all been good change. Of course, there's lots of things and lots of heartache, lots of fatigue, you know, awful things have happened as they will continue to do so. But I think if we can, in the smart community space, continue to have those, build that lens of we can do this differently and we are doing it differently. And then we can input into the future, I think, the shaping. And like we were talking about earlier, that empowerment of making. And I know people don't like that word, but it's just like when people can get excited about what they can input into and what they can change and what they can impact, I think that's really exciting.
I agree. Well, that brings us quite nicely to our last question, which is what is next for the Smart Community Podcast? Because speaking of change, there are a couple of changes coming up because you're quite busy. You've got a lot on your plate and you're a human, not a robot. You can't, you know.
Not yet.
You know, you're not a robot yet. You know, you got to look after your human side too. So what's coming up? What's next for the Smart Community Podcast?
What is next? Well, we are going to be shifting our scheduling slightly to be our fortnightly podcast. So we will be, we basically release 5 episodes a month. We're releasing 5 episodes every 2 months. So yeah, it's exciting for me because I still love doing the podcast and, you know, that conversation I had just last night really then cemented into why I'm doing this and why I continue to do this. But my focus is very much on speaking and doing more international keynoting, spreading the message, creating that impact, as we talked about, which I know the podcast does, but then really building on that. And to be able to do that effectively, just portioning off a little bit more brain time to be able to focus in and really shift and do that as things are building up, because they are building up. There's lots happening.
Which is very exciting.
So yeah, we're excited. And I think it'll be the same episodes. It'll just be a little bit less frequently, but consistently, of course, as well, as we always have been on the podcast.
And there's over 300 episodes now in the backlog. So if you are feeling like you're missing the every single Monday release, I'm sure you can scroll back through the feed and go back and listen to some of the fantastic previous episodes that, even if you listened before, like it might have been a couple of years ago, if you go back and listen again, you'll probably find you get something new out of it, with especially the stuff, I think, especially the episodes that were recorded pre-COVID. I just think it'd be interesting to, you know, go back and put a current lens on it, or, you know, think about what the takeaways are with the benefit of hindsight. And, you know, I just want to acknowledge you, Zoe, because you have, many people listening won't have seen everything behind the scenes, but you have achieved an awful lot in the last few years. You know, you've done a master's, you've had the podcast going, you've been running a consulting company. You've got a lot going on. And I'm really glad, obviously, that the podcast is going to continue. And as you said, because of those ripple impacts, those happening out in the world. So I think it's a good thing to prioritize a little bit more of your brain power for some of those other activities too that are very important, so that you don't burn out, because that would be not smart.
That would be not smart. And yes, I love speaking, and I'm looking forward to doing more of it. More things are coming in now. So yeah, it's just about, again, yeah, we can't do absolutely everything all the time, but I mean, I like to think I have a part-time life. So I have part-time everything in my life, which I love, and then I can just prioritize as I need to. So yeah, if you need a keynote speaker at Spark Communities, let me know. I am booking things out you book it in advance, but I'm open to bookings now. So we're doing that, building that schedule. So get in if you're really keen for me to come speak. Moderating panels, I also love to do. Actually, emceeing in general, I love to do. I recently did a wedding and that was super fun, and I love doing that. So yeah, let me know.
So you're available for weddings, is that what you're saying?
I am available for weddings, yes. So we don't, yes, definitely about wedding, any event really. I don't really discriminate too much, unless it's something a bit too strange. But no, definitely corporate events, but also weddings. Love doing weddings. So let me know.
Very cool. Well, thank you everyone for listening. We hope you have enjoyed this episode as much as we've enjoyed making it.
Thanks, Ellen, for having me on the Smart Community Podcast. I always enjoy our conversations and I really look forward to our next one. But yeah, thank you for being part of this podcast from the very beginning. I know you say I could have, but I definitely could not have done it without you. I would have got pod fatigue real bad, real quick. let's just say that. So yeah, massive thanks, and looking forward to continuing to put out episodes as we move forward in this space. And, you know, we're going to do some different things as well, which, you know, coming up in the next months and years, because we like to mix it up a little bit, bring you that content, but then, yeah, shift and change as we need to. So look out, there'll still be new stuff coming out every single fortnight, but then also some little treats in there as well.
Just a little teaser for you all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, it has been my absolute pleasure, Zoe. Here's to many more episodes.
Yes. Cheers.
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 The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're trying to deal with disruption, not sure what technologies to buy, need to facilitate genuine collaboration, then we can help. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community/consulting.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.